morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It's Thursday. Beautiful day here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We have a lot to talk about on the program today.
I had dinner last night with a couple friends.
Yes.
And they're so complimentary of Nick Wright and his hair. And Jenna, the way you guys dress every morning, especially the way you dress, but his hair. Had to let people
just
know.
Just so I'm clear, they didn't mention anything about the show or the way we do the show.
No, oh,
really
no, no.
Just the hair and the dress.
They actually do a competing show.
Yes, oh, now I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Just let the compliments sit.
A lot of eyes will be on Cam Newton the next few weeks as he returns to form after having off-season shoulder surgery. As expected, the Panthers are taking it slow. Cam, who has already unveiled a new throwing motion, will be on a pitch count in terms of his work at practice, according to head coach Ron Rivera. That being said, Rivera's confident his quarterback is, quote, ready to roll. So you think Cam will return to vintage Cam form, that Pro Bowl form?
I think not necessarily vintage, but I do believe a new and improved Cam Newton, because vintage Cam is he's the best dual threat quarterback that we've ever seen in this league. He's a scoring machine in the red zone. He is an automatic first down mover as far as moving those chains on those critical third or fourth down attempts. But at this stage of his career, it's about passing the football. And last year, we have to just go back to what really happened. Man, he took a big hit, and he tried to stay in there. He was hurt, ultimately ended up having a procedure done that ended his season. But the reason why Cam didn't play well last year was because he was injured. It wasn't anything else. So I think that Scott Turner, the quarterback coach, son of North Turner, they're the offensive coordinator. They've made some tremendous changes in the last, say, 16 months with Cam, with his overall throwing motion. He had made great strides last year. Then he gets injured. But you can expect this offseason, in talking with Cam when I did a game last year and talking with Scott and North Turner, they're really happy the way that Cam has jumped at the opportunity to get better at throwing the football. How his footwork can become a little more consistent, how his dropbacks in the pocket can become a little more consistent, and delivering the football as a pocket quarterback, that's Cam's goal. He even mentioned Tom Brady and looking at all the things that Tom's done. He's like, as I transition from my 20s into my 30s, man, I want to be a pocket passer. And that's something that Cam Newton early in his career, Nick, and there's no bigger fan of Cam Newton than yourself. That's something that a younger Cam Newton wouldn't have said.
And I also think when we're evaluating Cam and what he can be this season, we have to consider this. What if that TJ Watt hit that ruined his season had knocked him out for the season? What would our level of optimism be? Because this is something we talk about in the NBA, the NFL. Mm-hmm. If guys get hurt to where they can't play, we don't hold it against them. But if they get hurt just enough to where it greatly hampers their play, but they play through it and they
you
play poorly.
You never give any credit.
You're right. Like, never, you'd be better off missing
Shannon
time.
Talks about that all the time. Guys trying to push through and their performance suffers. But then as a fan, you don't gonna. Oh, man, it's great to see him out there. And he doesn't necessarily have to be out there.
The two corners for the Rams last year is the perfect example. In the same game, Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters both got hurt. The speculation at the time was both were going to be out a couple months. Aqib Talib was. While he's out, nobody is downgrading him, dropping him in the ranking, saying, he's lost a step. Marcus Peters, I think, missed one game and came back. Was clearly hampered and got beat a lot. And all of a sudden, people were like, well, that's why the Chiefs traded him. Guy's not that good. He had one good season. He was injured. And so Cam, either to his credit or to his detriment, he took pride in the fact that despite the style he plays, the physicality, running the football, prior to last year, he had missed four games in his entire NFL career. He was always out there. So he tried to play through it until the bitter end and ended up missing, I think, the last two games of the year once the season was lost. But he was making progress. He was completing the highest percentage of his passes for his career. It wasn't just seven-step drop, deep shot offense, which, by the way, is how he won the MVP, but also how he came way back to the pack the following season. It was smarter. It was getting his running backs involved more, most notably Christian McCaffrey. It was dealing with Greg Olsen once again being out with multiple injuries, and then he got hurt. So if his shoulder's healthy, if he continues on the pre-TJ Watt injury or pre-TJ Watt hit trajectory, then Cam should get back to being in the discussion as one of the top 10 quarterbacks in this league. Because, Jenna, we did that quarterback rankings list yesterday where I did 7. And even if people think Baker shouldn't have been on there, no one doubts the top 6. There's Matt Ryan. There's Big Ben. There's Phillip Rivers. There's Carson Wentz. There's 10, 11 guys.
Right.
So it's hard to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL today. Cam, once upon a time, was a consensus top 5. Question is, can he get back there?
You look at this, perhaps that TJ Watt injury was maybe a bit of a blessing in disguise. We already talked about how he's already tweaked his throwing motion.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want to say, well, if you really want to be a drop-back passer, you want to be a pocket quarterback, well, maybe it's up to Ron Rivera to sit him down and say, all right, we get it. You're a great runner. You're a phenomenal, tremendous athlete. You could juke. You can run. You can do all of it. But maybe it's time, Cam, that we pull back on that, even if it's not that comfortable for you, and you really do force yourself to stay in the pocket when plays go off schedule. Is there something to him having that conversation with
Cam? Well, I think that, yes, that is true and accurate. I believe Ron Rivera had the conversation with himself first, Jenna, and that was, how am I going to move forward with my quarterback? And he decided, as a former player in this league, I can't have my quarterback, even though he's the best athlete that's ever played quarterback, I can't have my guy getting hurt. So what do? He goes out and gets Norv Turner and Scott Turner. And they have been relaying this message, which you say, of somebody's got to have a hard talk with Cam. Scott and Norv have been doing that. They've been reiterating it to Ron. Cam's got a great deal of respect for Ron and as far as letting him direct his career. So Cam even mentioned that to me. Yes, I know that I gotta stop running as much as I did. But one thing we can't fall victim of is Cam got hurt last year in the pocket. 2 years ago, he was messing around in Atlanta running the ball. He got hurt. Yeah. That was totally different. So the conversation would be different if he had taken off and gotten hit down the field compared to in the pocket. But you are right. Someone must have those conversations, and Ron Rivera has made it a point by, you can see in his hirings with Norv and Scott, as far as, yes, we need to keep conveying that to Cam.
And we also have to be careful about, if you remove too much of that from his game, it removes one of his best attributes. The best short yardage runner in football is not a running back. It's Cam Newton. And so it's, okay, maybe fewer quarterback-designed runs on first and 10, save those hits for third and short, where he is almost an automatic first down. The 15-1 season, one of the reasons they were so good is they were able to be a four-down team, not a three-down team, because it was fourth and short. Cam Newton was keeping the ball and keeping those chains moving.
One thing, though, with a quarterback like Cam Newton, and I'm not going to say he's not the best short yardage back, but there's a reason. He's the best athlete to ever play quarterback. And when the quarterback runs the ball, the reason why Tim Tebow was able to be successful, it's number count.
Yeah.
You got an extra guy who can block. So typically the defense has a free runner. Now on offense, if your quarterback's going to run it, you have the free blocker who can pick up the extra guy. So now your quarterback, he has a better numbers in the running game than anyone else. And Cam Newton is absolute best at it.
Cam Newton heading into training camp on a pitch count. We'll see how that shoulder holds up. Take a break. Coming up, is LeBron James even a top 5 player in the NBA anymore?
What show am I on?
That's next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
for you coming up on August 3rd as Brooklyn's unbeaten Adam Kovnatsky takes on Chris Areola Saturday, August 3rd on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral, sponsored by Best Western Hotels and Resorts. Jaguars All-Pro corner Jalen Ramsey jokingly said this offseason he was going to, quote, ask for so much money, they'd have to put me on layaway. So Ramsey's arrival at Jags camp yesterday was ridiculously fitting. Take a look.
Y'all know what time it is. This man covers so good, he finna have his own cell phone service. The man's so good, they finna give him his own jail called Jalen Cowie, because these receivers are on 24-hour lockdown. If you check his pockets, he got 8 master locks in his pockets. They are on lockdown all season. The man, the myth, Jalen Ramsey.
Y'all know what it is.
Work, man, yeah, that's him.
Y'all know what it is.
It's time to get this money, money.
Chris Carter, your thoughts on your friend old Spicy Mouth Jalen?
Well, I'm just going to tell you guys, I like this a lot more than I like the GQ article.
Really?
Last season, he started the GQ article. He was, man, blasting the quarterbacks and everything. And the reason why Jalen, in the last year of his rookie contract, they've decided that they're not going to give him an extension. Jalen's taking this into his own hands. He's one of the best cover guys we have. 6'4" corner. You see that big old guy get out that? Oh, listen.
Wait, what if you're his teammate and you're there and you're watching this, you like this and you applaud it, or you're like, come on.
This is the thing. If I'm his teammate, I'm trying to help him get the money. We believe high tide raises all boats. So, yes, I'm trying to help him. The locker room is crazy, Jenna. We need guys like Jalen in there.
Now, I think the production, I'll be honest, I think fell a little flat. I think his hype man maybe could have done a better job. The door closed on him. However, if Jalen, if this
What about
is,
the intro, too, when he said this is the myth? He's not a myth.
The man, the myth. Listen, but however, Jalen might be crazy like a fox. If this brought up a long play in order to get Tom Coughlin to trade him, then it was brilliant. Because I cannot imagine Tom Coughlin watching this from his office.
That's who you knew wasn't driving it.
No.
Tom Coughlin's not getting ready.
Hey, man, Kansas City, call him up. Offer up some first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. Make it happen.
Stories to start your morning this morning. Lakers are certainly happy Anthony Davis demanded a trade and forced his way to L.A., but others around the league, not so much. Steve Kerr thinks AD forcing a deal to the Lakers is bad for the league, saying, quote, when you sign on that dotted line, you owe your effort and your play to that team, to that city, and to those fans. Nick, your thoughts?
I like Steve Kerr a lot, and I haven't said this to him before, but Steve Kerr, zip it. That's ridiculous. Rich Paul and Anthony Davis were very clear from the beginning. Not re-signing in New Orleans, would like to be traded. If you do not trade Anthony Davis, he will fulfill the terms of his contract. Wasn't no gun to anybody's head. New Orleans did what is right for their franchise rather than have him walk out the door. A decade ago, Cleveland wishes LeBron would have demanded a trade a year early and gotten something back for him rather than him just bounce to Miami. And mind your own garden, man. You had a player recruiting another player on arrival under contract once upon a time. That's how you grease the skids to get Kevin Durant. So I like you, Steve Kerr, but to me, this missed the mark.
Steve Kerr going to have to find some relevance in the NBA now he don't have that super team, because that wasn't good for the league. Since we're going to try to do what's best for the league, and that's you guys going to be right back into the middle of the pack. The league is nice. Most exciting the league's been since Jordan.
To the NFL now. Julio Jones is at Falcons training camp without the new deal that he wants. New deal or no new deal, Julio has high expectations for himself. He's, quote, going crazy this year with his sights set on 3,000 yards. See, what do you expect from Julio Jones?
Julio, the last couple off seasons, I know that he struggled with a couple nagging injuries. This off season didn't have any of that. Arthur Blank's given him his word. He's going to get him a new deal. So I would expect great things from Julio. 1,600 to 1,700 yards is the real goal for the best Most talented wide receiver that we have in the league.
Listen, I talked to a Hall of Fame wide receiver a bunch of times last week, and he kept telling me Julio Jones, best receiver in football. I don't know if I agree with him, but I might defer to him on this.
Tell me someone that does something better. Tell me.
3,000 yards.
DeAndre Hopkins has better hands than Julio.
There's individual guys that might have skills better. I get your point. But the total package, you believe he is the best. I think he's the second best. But regardless, I think 2,000 yards is doable for Julio Jones.
You missed the part. I talked to a Hall of Fame receiver, mm-hmm. but he still didn't change my opinion. This doofus.
To the Cowboys now, and another player seeking a new deal, and that's Ezekiel Elliott. Despite rumors that he's going to hold out, head coach Jason Garrett expects Zeke to be on the team plane to training camp to Oxnard, California today. So you expect Zeke to be at camp?
I expect him to be there, but I would have had those conversations. I'm not going to play. I'm going to participate in all the workouts and everything. But when you start playing those preseason games, Zeke will be over here in a uniform with some tennis shoes on, not no football cleats and everything. That would be my conversation with him, and that's what I expect. He can't jeopardize them giving away all that money to other players and him coming up short, getting injured with 2 years left on his contract. That would hurt his career.
I think it's great advice. I think it's, and by the way, even if he didn't hear it from you, it's similar to what Bobby Wagner appears to be doing right now, awaiting his new deal. I'm not going to hold out, but I'm going to be very judicious with how often I participate while I protect myself. The difference is Bobby Wagner might have better expectations that he is getting a new deal than Zeke, where the Cowboys said back in May, man, we got a couple years to figure this out with Ezekiel Elliott.
All right, moving on to the Giants now. There is a battle of quarterback between two-time Super Bowl champion Eli Manning and first-round pick Daniel Jones. Head coach Pat Shurmur has indicated Eli will be the week one starter, but he has liked what he's seen from Jones so far, saying that Jones has exceeded expectations and that there really isn't anything he can't do in terms of playing quarterback. Chris Carter, will Daniel Jones replace Eli early this season?
Well, I'm just going to tell you something. Pat, like you and the rest of that organization, I just don't know what they've been watching, because I watched this college tape and I didn't see one thing that he was great at. So now all of a sudden, since the draft in April, he's only practiced in shorts. Now they got a quarterback, doesn't have a weakness. Like, just stop. He's a young quarterback. If they were put him into the lineup, both of them would lose their job week number one. If he was the starter, both of them would get fired. He is not ready to play in an NFL game. There is no competition against Eli. And you can't test a quarterback in OTAs in shorts. All these, what we call them, grass All-Americans, short All-Americans, guys can play, they make plays. Then you put them in an NFL game, they are terrified of an NFL game. So, no, just stop it. Just stop it. I know you guys are trying to justify that bad pick. Oh, it's going to play out. That will be a bad pick, one of the worst picks the Giants have made in a long time.
Here's the problem. The Giants, you can lie with your words, you can't lie with your actions. And their actions on draft night said a couple things. One is, for reasons that I can't understand, you don't seem to be able to understand, but hey, I've been wrong on quarterbacks before. They love Daniel Jones. Dwayne Haskins, who checked every box, was available. Nope, not interested in him. Daniel Jones is our guy. And then Dave Gettleman came out and said how many other teams wanted him, how they had to grab him there, and how he fell in love with him at, what was it, not Senior Day, but the Senior Bowl, that he just fell in love with Daniel Jones. Okay, fine. Okay, well, if you fall in love with a quarterback, and you take him in the top 10, and your incumbent is coming off a really bad five-year stretch, and he's going into year 16, then guess what? Of course he should be in very tight competition to start week one. That we have seen quarterbacks in training camp win the starting job, but they have already removed that from Daniel Jones. There was a report that he is not in competition, and then Pat Shurmur, while he said it was a competition, he said Eli's the starter and acknowledged Eli's going to start week one. So what is it? Your actions on draft day said you knew Eli's time was up. Your actions since then appear to say, okay, well, we placated the fans by drafting a quarterback, but the quarterback is not actually competing with Eli. Why? Do the Giants think the year they trade Odell Beckham, they pair off Landon Collins and Olivier Vernon, that now is their Super Bowl window? You have to have the veteran quarterback? Now would be the time to get the young guy reps if he was even close to worthy of a top 10 pick. It's so contradictory what's going on at the Meadowlands.
I feel like that's the mindset for any other team in the league except for the Giants, who somehow protect and coddle Eli Manning and his reputation and everything more than anyone else on that team or anyone else almost that's ever played for that organization. They want to make sure the transition is so smooth that maybe they want, if they are going to finally take Eli out, make sure that this Daniel Jones is in the best position to succeed when he does replace Eli, so then you don't have this horrific media firestorm of, well, do we take him out too soon? Do we put Eli back in? I just feel like with the Giants and with Eli Manning, it's just a different conversation.
Yeah, the Giants have taken care of Eli Manning. I think that's a great point. And they might continue to do that with their quarterbacks going forward. That's fine. But the last 2 years, we've had a number of quarterbacks drafted in the first round. The only one with a worse PFF rating than Daniel is your guy, Josh Allen.
Oh, Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And that was
he's the only guy.
And
you were right about
that.
I was talking about take Josh Allen because he's got the athletic ability and the big arm. He's got an NFL body. Now, Daniel Jones don't have that. He don't have a big-time arm. He doesn't have the size and athleticism. All right? So I don't understand why they took him. If they wanted to set him up for success, Jenna, they would have taken him later. And then our expectations. Because if you're if you're a top 10 pick, Nick has pointed this out.
You play.
You are getting ready to play in that first year. They are not getting ready to push you back. All these guys who have been drafted the last couple years, all they do is play them.
And this is where it's just it's very hard to try to, on these shows, we try to be logical. We try to look at the evidence in place, especially on projection or prediction, and say, okay, well, this is what, we're not privy to the meetings. This is what this team is thinking, what they're doing. The Giants have been so scattershot. We're trying to win right now, but we're cutting away the defense. We trust Eli, but we're spending the top 10 pick on a quarterback. We believe Eli's got a couple years left of football in him, but, man, I fell in love with Daniel Jones. What is it? And you mentioned the loyalty to Eli. I get it. It's going to end up hurting him. He's going to end now his career with a losing record rather than a winning record. We keep getting further and further away from 2007 and 2011 to where even the most loyal Giant fans, what's their immediate thought of Eli Manning? The helmet catch probably. What's the next few?
The last few years. Yeah.
It's not his fault. It's not Eli's fault that he aged the way almost every quarterback aside from Brady and Breeze age. It is the Giants' responsibility to recognize that, have a plan in place. It does not appear they do, even though they drafted a quarterback this year.
All right, let's move on. There is a changing the guard in the NBA, at least according to a survey of 20 anonymous coaches, scouts, and executives. They were all polled recently. And get this, they deemed Kawhi Leonard the best player in the league, followed by Giannis and then Harden. LeBron got a whopping total of 0 votes. In that same poll, by the way, 0 people voted the Lakers to win the title. See, what do you make of these results? Is LeBron no longer the NBA's best player?
Well, this is the thing. If you look at last season, they're judging on last year what they saw, the injury that kept LeBron out a lot longer than any other thing that we've seen with LeBron. So you see just a little dent in the armor. But if they're judging it on the postseason, which typically that's what they do, our show was doing that until my guy ended up being the best player. And then now I'm getting a shell game. I'm down at Times Square, and Nick has got me chasing the ball. So now I don't know where it is. It was going to be based on who's the best in the playoffs. Kawhi shut down Giannis in a head-to-head. Typically, we don't even have the head-to-head. So then, Nick, I knew it was in the middle. Somebody honked their horn. I looked to the side, and Nick moved it over here. And now I'm lost. I don't know who the best player is in the NBA is. I'm just going to give this to my resident NBA expert.
Okay.
And I'm just going to sit over here and try to observe. I yield my time to the senator
from Missouri. I appreciate that. Okay, so here's the deal. Kawhi being voted the best player in the league is totally legitimate. because of the things Chris said we were talking about. That with LeBron missing the playoffs, it did appear to be an open competition with a few guys eligible for it. KD looked like he was going to grab that brass ring. Then it looked like it was going to be Giannis. Harden had a brief opportunity once KD went down, and then Kawhi snatched it.
And if I had my way, I wouldn't allow you to give out this until KD was back. Because KD was getting ready to take it or have something to say.
We all have short-term memories. It's just what recent. No one last year thought Kawhi. We all forgot how good Kawhi was.
Jenna, that is you took the words right out of my mouth. While it's totally legitimate, this is a case study in recency bias.
Yep.
12 months ago today, after LeBron had arguably the best playoff run of his career, even though it ended in being swept in the finals.
Yes.
With what he did with that ragtag group in Cleveland, 51-9-9 game one of the NBA Finals.
11 sheets of paper.
Right. Exactly. If you do this same survey, 20 votes, 17 for LeBron, 3 for Kevin Durant would be about my guess. Because KD was the only person, when we talked about best player in the league, that was discussed as maybe a few people would say it was Durant. There was no one else. And now we knew Giannis was up and coming. And by the way, Kawhi was a forgotten man.
Completely.
Entirely.
Yeah.
And now, based on a brilliant playoff run, admittedly, but one playoff run, Kawhi is the consensus. It's, what was it? Kawhi got 12, Giannis got 6, Harden got 2. And I love James Harden, but I'd love to know who these scouts, coaches, and executives are. I feel like in that group of 20, it's maybe 16 scouts, one coach, a few executives. I don't know if there's anyone other than my friend Daryl Morey that actually would rather have James Harden than LeBron James, but set that aside. It was a down year for LeBron. A down year where he gave you 27.5, 8.5, 8.5. A year where he put up a stat line that no one in the history of basketball other than LeBron James has given you. And if people bring up, well, he only played 55 games. Well, the guy who won this played 62. And so the 7 games, it's the playoff run. And I appreciate that. And he's earned it. I get it. I don't agree with it. I think LeBron is still, even in year 17, better. But it's not a ridiculous statement to say Kawhi is the best player in the league. What is a ridiculous one is when people now, and I'm seeing this as well, it's why it was one of the things Jenna teased, is LeBron a top 5 guy? Is LeBron the best player on his own team? Those types of conversations, I think people are about to get a rude awakening come the season, no matter how good the Lakers actually are, if the Lakers are better than the Clippers, any of that. Even in his down year, he was 5th in the NBA in points, 3rd in assists, and 8th in player efficiency rating in a year that was halted midway point with a torn groin.
Right, but the tiebreaker, if you talk about the 55 games, 62 games, is those series he went. That 7-game series, yes, where he dominated against Philadelphia, both ends of the court. And then you get the league MVP, and Giannis, you're down 2-0, and you win 4 in a row. And then you get up 3-1 on the world champs. That's the difference between 62 games and 55, is that month and what Kawhi did that month to 6 weeks. That's the reason why right now he should be. But the conversation should be 5 players. KD won't be able to be in the discussion, but his name should be mentioned. Anthony Davis should be mentioned. Harden, Giannis, and LeBron. All those guys is on the table. Who's the best player in the world?
All right, let's break there. Take a break. Coming up, hey, should we pencil in the Clippers now as NBA champs? That's still ahead on First Things First. Welcome back here to First Things First. We're now joined by FS1 NBA analyst Sarah Kustoff.
Great to see you guys.
Sarah, it's
wonderful.
Great to have you.
Welcome.
Thanks.
We are out of the NBA season, but a lot to talk about within the upcoming NBA season. Sarah, the Clippers are arguably the winner of the offseason, landing both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, right? But that almost wasn't the case. According to reports, the Clippers called the Rockets about trading for James Harden before they were able to acquire George. Rockets went on to get Russell Westbrook, and there's your NBA landscape. Sarah, would Harden have been a better teammate for Kawhi than Paul George?
I think this is fun for us to theoretically look at, because I believe the call about James Harden, Houston and Daryl Morey probably said, yep, not available, and hung up the phone. So I think this is just something for us to take a look at and banter at. You never really know. I think so much of what we do is looking at who would fit with who, but until guys are together, you can't necessarily truly understand how they will fit, how they will play. I think the beauty of what we see in Kawhi and Paul George is that they seem like players that can fit in well with anyone. The one differentiating factor of why I think they're going to be one of the best duos in the league is because of what they do on the defensive end. And that's why I believe that Kawhi and Paul George will be able to take this team to another level, because both of these guys can guard multiple positions depending on who they're facing. We look at how they face up against the Lakers. We look at how they face up against different teams in the West. And you could say, okay, you could toss Paul George on LeBron. You could toss Kawhi on LeBron. But I think these guys can play off the ball, on the ball. They can create their own shots. They're spot-up shooters. You can go through a multitude of things. Do I think James Harden and Kawhi Leonard would be a blast to watch play? Do you think that the talent of James Harden, how he plays offensively, would be something special alongside a player like Kawhi Leonard? Absolutely. However, I think this is something that as we look at, as we look in the offseason, how they would fit together, it's not necessarily something that was actually a realistic possibility for them to be on the same team.
I mean, it would have been realistic if Daryl Morey decided can't win a title, want to blow it up. I mean, I would have thought most people thought Paul George leaving OKC 1 year after signing an extension would not have been realistic until we saw it, until we saw the draft haul they were able to get. And so, I mean, it would have taken one person and Daryl, because I think the vast majority of people believe James Harden's a better player than Paul George. Yep. That James Harden has been consistently a better player than Paul George. He has been a league MVP and in the MVP running four other times. Paul George this year finished third, but other than that, that's his first top 8-9 finish, I think, in his career. Certainly first top 5 finish. To me, this is an easy one because it's both hypothetical. In that we are going to get to see Kawhi and Paul George, but we haven't yet. Just like we haven't seen Kawhi and James Harden. Kawhi and James Harden would be as devastating of a 1-2 punch as LeBron and Anthony Davis and as we could possibly have in the league. When you have a guy in Harden who is in the discussion for best isolation scorer ever, and then a great ball distributor, and then a guy in Kawhi Leonard who's in the discussion for best perimeter defender ever, and a guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands at all times to kill you, to me that fit is perfect. You couldn't pick another player in the league that would be a better fit next to James Harden than Kawhi Leonard, I would argue. Like, who are the other guys? Joel Embiid, maybe, for interior defense. Anthony Davis for the pick and roll. But that's your short list. I think Paul George also would be a great fit next to Harden, for that matter. But that would have been the one way to make this Clippers offseason a couple degrees better. I think Harden and Kawhi would be terrifying along the lines of Steph and Kevin Durant without the redundancy of Steph and Kevin Durant.
Well, this is the thing, though. When you get to this level, a lot of it's about respect. And you're dealing with NBA players on a daily basis and their respect for one another. I watched a press conference yesterday and the easiness, because I know Kawhi. I don't know Paul George, but I saw the easiness for which Kawhi was exchanging with Paul George. So there's really a high level of respect just in life. Because even though you're signing with a basketball team, Nick, it's more than just basketball. You don't live on the basketball court. The game is only 48 minutes. And you know what I respect about guys? It's not their skill. It's just what they're about. And Dennis Green used to teach me this, Chris. He said, Chris, man, you're a very, very vocal leader. But there are going to be certain guys you're not going to be able to reach. I'll reach them because you know what I'll tell them? Don't listen to him. Watch him. Watch how hard he plays the game. Watch how smart he plays the game. Watch how he works out. Watch how he studies. I'll show you a video because Denny Green videotaped guys coming in and out the building. And he would have a time log on when you checked in and when you checked out. And he would show it to guys. And he would say, this is how you earn your teammates' respect. So when you don't play defense and you have a guy like Kawhi Leonard's not going to love you, man. He is not going to love you. You might be the greatest basketball player in the world. But when I'm down at the other end of this 94-foot court and I see you have the energy and when you pass half court, something deflates on you and you can't guard people and you're a great athlete, trust me, the respect level is never there. It is never there when you don't put out the same type of effort. We're all being paid to do a job. That's why Kawhi and Paul George, to me, and the Clippers, are a perfect fit with Doc Rivers, his mentality, how he became a player, how he coaches the game in the current roster they have. So if you want to talk basketball, positions, one's a point guard, distributor, yeah, but life is not that way in professional sports. You spend a lot of time off the court, and Kawhi was sitting next to a guy yesterday, to me, he was so comfortable with, and that's why Kawhi was successful last year. Lowry's very comfortable with him. Serge Ibaka, you saw him in the car, how comfortable he was with him. And that's a huge part of sports. It's not just the 48 minutes on the court.
And I agree with you. Would they be devastating? Absolutely. I think anyone with James Harden and Kawhi would be devastating. However, that's the difference, is how you feel about what the person is doing on the floor. And that's why I wouldn't say Harden and Kawhi would be a clear-cut better duo, because of that respect they have for what they do. Because when you listen to the press conference, both of those guys continue to bring up, we're the same type of player. We have the same mentality. We care about being two-way players. We respect that part of the game. And so I think all of that in its totality makes a bigger difference, just necessarily, than the superb talent that James Harden is on the
offense. And, Nick, that's something personally, like you've even told me. You didn't know me before we started the show, or just knew a little bit about me. You realize, man, this guy's in the Hall of Fame, but I work like I'm a free agent. I work like I ain't got no job, like I don't have no guarantees. And people see that and they respect that. You can project something what you say and you can be talented, but at some point, man, it's about what type of effort are you going to show every single day? And that's why we have a great rapport here. We know everyone's going to be working hard. We're all working for the same goals. And that carries over in professional sports and in the locker rooms.
I mean, that's why it comes down to, who do you want pairing next to you if you're Kawhi Leonard, an elite offensive player or a great two-way player? And you see, for Kawhi, maybe that second one was the more important.
Well, I think Kawhi would have taken
either of these guys. He didn't have a choice.
Of course. Yes.
But the point that I would make is, I don't think you're saying this, I don't think it's fair to present James Harden as a guy who has not worked as hard as anyone in the league at getting better every offseason. I think he is a guy who maybe his first year or two in Houston, other stars around the league looked at him as one of those nightlife all-stars and now looks at him as a bit of a workout warrior. Now, does he have the ability defensively that either of these guys do? No. Does he show the consistent effort defensively that either one of these guys do? No. But he's also no longer the, you know, a Vine all-star of bad defensive clips. He's gotten better in that regard. And maybe I am too reliant on just the raw talent. Man, this guy just scored 36 a game and has been one of the top four players in the league for the last 5 years. First or second MVP, four out of the last five seasons. And Paul George is just now entering that conversation. And
people act like Paul George averaged 18 last year.
No, he averaged 28, but was his first high-volume scoring year. I mean,
many years removed from a devastating leg injury?
Well, five,
like, I think
5 years removed.
I think he's still on his way up.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I think Paul George is a tier beneath the guys we're talking about here.
Take a break. Sarah, we'll see you in a little bit. Coming up, have we seen the end of the Eli Manning era?
Did we ask this last year? Did we ask this two years ago? Oh, shucks.
More First Things First after this. Oh. Welcome back to First Things First. We're now joined by Super Bowl champ Chris Canty.
Good morning,
Jenna. Hi, Chris.
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to talk some football.
So we should talk some football.
Let's get to it.
Okay, Chris. Let's talk about one of your former teams, the New York Giants. Kenny, there's a battle at quarterback brewing between two-time Super Bowl champ Eli Manning and first-round pick Daniel Jones. Whether you think there should be one brewing or not, head coach Pat Shurmur has indicated Eli will be the week one starter, but he has liked what he's seen from Jones so far, saying that he's exceeded expectations and that there really isn't anything that he cannot do in terms of playing quarterback. Chris, will Daniel Jones replace Eli this season or early this season?
So, full disclosure, I know Daniel Jones. He went to my high school. I root for him. I have a tremendous amount of respect for how he's handled the criticism from the media and the fans because the Giants took him with the sixth overall pick. But that being said, in terms of the answers that we're trying to find out about whether or not he's capable of succeeding Eli Manning, we won't know until we see him actually play in a game. Pat Shurmur is talking about how he's exceeded expectations and there's really nothing that he can't do. But the reality is, to this point in the offseason, they ain't done nothing.
He hasn't done anything.
They ain't done nothing. They're running around in shorts and helmets. I mean, you're throwing against air, and when the defense is out there, you know, they're in short, so it's not like it's actual live tempo. When you put on the pads, it's a different tempo, it's a different speed, and so it'll be interesting to see how he adjusts to that moving throughout the preseason. I think the Giants can do him a solid by trying to get him as many preseason reps as possible, maybe even working him in with the first team, because let's face it, Eli Manning's going into year 16. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm necessarily focused on getting Eli Manning ready for the season. This year is about the development of Daniel Jones because he is the future of the Giants franchise.
And unfortunately, we don't know those things. Daniel Jones, I'm going to give him a little bit of a credit. And now I know that we have a personal interest because he comes from your high school and everything. I'm not going to flame him as much. But in college, he did not have a good offensive line. He did not have the type of skilled people, but he did have the type of training. In Cutliff, Cutliff has worked with a number of quarterbacks, put a lot of guys in the pros. He's one of the best teachers of young quarterbacks that we have out there. So I'll try to give him that. With the New York Giants, though, what were their expectations? If you've already exceeded expectations and you're a top 10 pick, what I think you were, a bum?
Right.
Like, so for me, like, they get their messages so crossed up. And with that high pick, Daniel Jones should be expected to play football this year. I haven't seen it. I didn't see the arm strength. Like, now his arm is not weak, but he don't have no cannon of an arm. And when you don't have a cannon of an arm, you're not a great athlete. I don't know what they saw, because I believe he would have been available later in the draft. This is what I said. If Dwayne Haskins was at Duke and passed for the types of numbers that he had, where would he have gotten drafted?
He might have been undrafted, see.
I mean,
he might have.
Wow. I mean, just imagine. Yeah. Imagine Haskins mm-hmm. has the same numbers mm-hmm. that your guy has.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Because I know if Daniel Jones was at Ohio State and threw for 50, I know where he'd been drafted.
Number one.
First overall
one.
Pick.
No, that there's no question about that. And that's almost.
At Ohio State?
Yeah.
In the Big Ten?
Yeah. And okay. That's almost.
Okay.
And that's almost.
We'll argue about that.
What do you mean?
No, we're agreeing.
We're agreeing. I said
yeah.
first
of all. Oh, okay.
First
yeah,
overall
yeah.
pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so, no, but that's. And that's almost a separate topic about why quarterbacks are viewed the way they are. But on the Giants specifically, man, learn from the teams that do things right and try to avoid the lessons from the teams that do things wrong. And by that, I mean this. How did Russell Wilson become the Seahawks starter? They had a competition in camp, and he won.
They had just paid
Matt Flynn. How did Carson Wentz become the Eagles starter? They had a competition in camp, and he won. And they shipped off, was it Sam Bradford? Traded Bradford and got something for him because they saw the talent mm-hmm. Carson Wentz. What about teams that are poorly run? Baker Mayfield, drafted one overall, not competing. Ineligible. Doesn't matter what you do. Tyrod, who I like, Tyrod went out there, and maybe they could have won that game they tied to start the year. How about the Houston Texans? They draft Deshaun Watson. Bill O'Brien says, nope, we're going with the veteran. Going with, I think it was Brian Hoyer. He got benched the first half of the first game because Deshaun was so much clearly better,
Ravens.
But it wasn't a competition.
With Lamar.
They at least let Lamar compete and then eventually
take over.
But the... Listen, I don't think I don't think Daniel Jones actually would beat out Eli in an open competition at this point. I don't. Mm-hmm. But if you take him sixth overall, don't you have to believe it's possible when mm-hmm. Eli is on the clear mm-hmm. downside? That's the problem for me with the Giants in general. It's the constant contradictions. Mm-hmm. We think we can win right now. That's why we're not cutting Eli. We're not trading Eli. We're not asking Eli to take a pay cut. But Olivier Vernon, Landon Collins, Odell Beckham get to step in. Like, wait, what? We love Daniel Jones. I fell in love with him at the Senior Bowl. I think other teams would have traded up to get him, but he can't even compete for the starting quarterback job. Wait, what? There doesn't seem to be a consistency in decision flow, and that is, I mean, that just irks me from any organization.
My issue with the Giants is they talk to us if no one else is watching film. No one else can question them. Mm-hmm. Oh, I watched all of Eli's tape. People missed. He was really playing good. I missed it? No, I didn't miss it. And Daniel Jones, whatever they saw in him, I missed that in college. So their current quarterback and their backup quarterback, they feel as if what they're watching no one else is watching, Chris.
Yeah, no, they feel like that. But I think the one thing that we're not considering when we're talking about the dynamic of a quarterback competition is the fact that Daniel Jones would be supplanting a quarterback that's won two Super Bowls for that franchise. Eli Manning is arguably the best quarterback in New York pro football history.
Yep.
So, I mean, to succeed a legend like that, those are big shoes to fill.
But you don't
and,
have
the
no
and the organization wants to make sure that the timing of it
but
is right.
But you don't have no great quarterback history, though.
No,
It ain't like some franchise been putting out quarterback after quarterback.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just saying that it's a lot easier to bench a quarterback like Sam Bradford or Matt Flynn because the guy hadn't done anything for your organization. But on the flip side of that, when you draft a guy in the top 10, particularly at the quarterback position, I mean, there are expectations. That guy should be competing for the job. And we got to keep in mind that the most valuable commodity in the National Football League is a quarterback on a rookie wage scale because you can build around that guy. So it makes sense that the Giants move forward with Daniel Jones after as being their guy. I just feel like this is the year that they have to focus on transitioning from Eli Manning. You could have made an argument that they should have done it a couple of years ago, but this feels like the season that they have to do it.
But even if you know he's your week one starter, pretend there's a competition because then you come out of it with some confidence.
What about the rest of the locker room? Everybody else competing for their job. Why ain't that dude compete?
Well, listen, it doesn't make sense for them to carry a $23 million cap charge for Eli Manning throughout the entire offseason without starting in week one. So from a business standpoint, they've already made the decision that Eli Manning is going to be their week one quarterback.
He's most likely
we
not
We might not agree
be.
With it. I'm just saying they've already made that decision.
And he's not going to be their starter to end this season. This transition is going to happen.
They said they loved him, but they also said Eli's got a couple years left.
We can't really believe everything.
Well, here's the thing. It's an important year for Pat Shurmur, too. You might have to consider that the coach might be fighting for his job. Who does he want out there as his quarterback? Does he want a rookie or does he want Eli Manning?
The guy Canny went to chemistry class with.
Depends. Daniel's Chris, we'll see you later. Coming up.
No, I'm a little older than him.
Is LeBron even a top five player in the NBA? An inflammatory question. Next on First Things First. On Saturday, we got a great MLB doubleheader for you. First, baseball's fiercest rivalry rages on as Aaron Judge powers the Pinstripes against Mookie Betts and the Red Sox. Then you got the Astros taking on the Cardinals. All starts at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Red Sox might be catching the Yankees at the wrong time, man.
The
game-saving win a couple nights ago hung 10 on the Twins last night. Yankees red hot.
Couple of highlights from last night. We call him Butt First. Indians, Blue Jays,
Lourdes
Gurriel Jr. racing into foul territory, making a nice
Oh, this is nice.
Net.
Toe up, Ooh, sliding
concentration.
On your bum.
Yep. That's a great play.
Nice catch. I mean, he's a major league major fielder.
NBA offseason, Knicks' Dennis Smith Jr. has got some dunking skills.
So, DSJ, first of all, Chris Carter said it earlier, we want you on the show.
Yeah, we want you on the show. I want to talk some basketball. And also, I got some other stuff for you, bro.
Oh, okay.
What else you got for it?
I'm going to hook him up with something.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I got someone who wants to meet him. Mm-hmm.
Oh, love connection potential.
Just relax. Okay. Introduction.
Can you help out the current person on the show?
Yeah, I'm helping you. I'm keeping you gainfully employed. That makes you pretty.
For a second, you need help, Sarah.
All right, Jenna, what are we watching?
Number one player in the 2021 class, Jonathan Kuminga, going coast to coast before putting the big man on a poster.
Killed it at Peach Jam. Duke just gave him an offer. He's a rising sophomore.
He's from Connecticut? Yes, in the Connecticut area. He's
confirmed.
You should go watch him play.
Absolutely. See, what you'd move to Connecticut.
Oh, he's from Greenwich. Oh, let's get it done. Hey, someone help me out. Someone put me on it. I'm new to Greenwich. I'm a resident. I can dump my trash. I can go to the beach.
He's
got a sticker on my car.
Man. This guy is so excited. He texted me yesterday. I'm at the country club. So bougie, man. Survived 2 years in the mean streets in New York. He's like, nah, I'm at the country club.
Skipping class.
He's off golfing.
Go ahead, Jenna.
Yeah, you guys try to ruin my life.
We're talking a little NBA action with Sarah Kustak. I don't even know what we're doing. There's a change of the guard in the NBA, Sarah, at least according to a survey of 20 anonymous coaches, scouts, and executives. All 20 of them were polled recently. And get this, they deemed Kawhi Leonard the best player in the league, followed by Giannis. And then Harden. LeBron got a whopping total of 0 votes. In that same poll, by the way, 0 people voted the Lakers to win the title. Sarah, what do you make of these results? Is LeBron no longer the NBA's best player?
This list looks to me like recency bias.
There it is.
And I do think all of those players, Kawhi certainly could be the best player in the league next year. So could Giannis. So could James Harden. But let's not forget about LeBron James. And I think it was so, we had such an exciting postseason. I think we continue to talk about this upcoming NBA season. There are more teams than ever that believe they have a legitimate shot to win a title. But I am excited to see the player LeBron James comes back as. We know he's going to be in his 17th season in the league, but he's coming off of a season where he played the lowest number of career minutes. He of course, dealt with injury. However, he's had more rest than he's had throughout the course of his career. And so who knows what he will look like, but I believe we are going to see some of the best from LeBron James. I think we are only 2 years removed from a postseason where he was absolutely extraordinary. 34, 10, and 9.
Over the course of the playoffs.
Over the course of the playoffs. So I believe that it's going to be interesting to see who could shake things up. But at this point, I don't think this poll necessarily means anything more than people are remembering the extraordinary postseason and finals that they saw.
Yeah. And we have no choice. We don't know moving forward. We don't know Giannis. He's got Cal Korver there. He's working on a three, trying to keep his elbow in a little more. We don't know what's going to happen over the next couple years. What are we going to go on, the last 5 years, last 3 years? All we can do is go on last season. And if we go on last season, LeBron James, in no one's world, can say he's the best player. There's no way. How can he? He missed all that time. An injury, we didn't think it was that severe. Now, his numbers, yeah, but there were a lot of players had great numbers. If it was just the numbers, then Harden is the best player. KD during the regular season was phenomenal and also was starting in the playoffs. What if he finishes the playoffs? So you have to go on recent history. And if you're going on right now, Kawhi Leonard is the best player in the league. What he did in those three series back to back, that's the reason why he would have the title. Philadelphia with the buzzer beater, what he did against Giannis, beating them 4-2, winning four in a row, and being up 3-1 on Golden State, forcing Kevin Durant off the injured reserve onto the court, which he had that awful injury. So all we can do is go on what happened recently, and Kawhi Leonard, it's not his fault. It's not his fault that he beat Philadelphia. It's not his fault he shut down Giannis. It's not his fault that he's the world champ. That's not his fault LeBron James got hurt.
Well, and far be it for me to criticize a list based on recency bias when about 23 and a half hours ago, I did a list and said Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback in the NFL. He's only played 1 year ever, but he was so great last year. I really do believe that. And so I get why people would say, man, from what we saw from Kawhi in the playoffs, to give him this title because he won the title. The reason it's hard
and
for him,
how he played.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. How he played en route to winning the title. The reason this is difficult for me is because this is the most extreme version of recency bias because it's not even based on all of last season. It is based on from the buzzer beater to the final game.
So let's just do this. Let's just change history.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say Giannis, they go ahead and beat Toronto. Then Giannis and them go on to beat someone else, whoever
beat
in the West.
The Warriors.
And Giannis is. But instead of Kawhi, let's just go with Giannis.
To me, he would have had a stronger claim because at the end of the regular season, people were saying, Giannis going to be MVP, might be the best player in the league. And that's what I was getting to, is when the playoffs started, nobody was saying Kawhi's the best player in the world. Maybe people said LeBron's out because he missed it.
Right. If there was 10 players to watch in the playoffs, was Kawhi Leonard not on there?
Oh, he was certainly on there. But
okay, well, then what matters?
Okay, so if you can say you can go from the 7th to the 1st in a
The only reason
month
why he was
run.
That way, Nick, is because he got injured in San Antonio.
Because he got injured in San Antonio and because over the course of the regular season, he was really, really good, but not extraordinary. And the team was really, really good with him and really, really good without him. Now, we then saw the playoffs. And again, the title he won is a heavy title because there's no other All-Stars, guys that played at All-Star level that year, because of who he went through, going through Embiid, then Giannis, then the Warriors. I get all of that. But just a year ago, it wasn't just, Sarah, to your point, that LeBron was way above the pack. It was the guy chasing him was Kevin Durant. Yeah. And then it was a group of people of which Kawhi had been forgotten about because the recency bias at that point had forgotten about Kawhi because he'd been out a year.
I also think we put, and I think deservedly so much weight on what players do in the postseason.
Of course.
Your legacy is made in how you perform during the playoffs. That's everything that matters most. So I believe because LeBron James was not even a part of that and because of the performance Kawhi Leonard had, and again, Kawhi Leonard should come back. I believe that this should be how we look at it. I just think a lot can change once the ball is actually taken.
A lot of time, this is people's fault, though. Because when Kawhi went to Toronto, I said Kawhi Leonard's one of the best players in the world. All right? People thought, oh, man, he forced his way out. So somehow they thought he was just an all-star. No, Kawhi was a superstar. And we said on this show, we're going to award the best player after the regular season, and then let's see in the postseason. LeBron James forfeited the title when he wasn't participating. He chose the Lakers. He did not get them into the playoffs. So in the playoffs, after it played out, Kevin Durant, unfortunately, with him getting hurt, he had to be removed from it. Kawhi Leonard was the only man standing. It ain't his fault. It ain't my fault. I believed him. Kawhi Leonard is not an all-star. He is a super-duper star and is in a better situation after carrying that Toronto team to a world championship. I'm not going to change the rules after I made the rules last year and then we got through the playoffs and be like, ah, let me try to get this where LeBron. LeBron shouldn't have been in that conversation because he wasn't in the playoffs.
Right, which is all folded into recency bias. Last year at this time, we weren't talking about Kawhi at all. You're right. It's what you remember in the regular season, and then there's a heavy price and a heavy weight that you place on what the performance is like in the postseason.
And I also think, too, with Kawhi, he was load managing throughout the course of the season. So I think a lot of us weren't necessarily talking about him as being the best player in the world just yet because Toronto was still winning when he wasn't on the floor. And was he performing at a high level? Absolutely. But he wasn't doing things that made us think that we were even better than what LeBron James would be doing, Kevin Durant would be doing, all the rest.
But to your point about LeBron coming off the rest, if he had to forfeit the crown because he missed didn't just not go on a playoff run, but missed the playoffs entirely, I get it. And we were saying that during the regular season, once it was clear LeBron was not going to make the playoffs.
Because if he was the best player in the world, he should have got that team to the playoffs.
Okay, well, I disagree with that, but however, I did say throughout the year when I thought it was going to be Giannis or Durant that one of them was at least going to be able to temporarily take it. Kawhi ended up being the one. But to your point about what he will look like rested, post-injury, he was 28-9-10. And so rested, fully post-injury, I think LeBron will remind everyone who he actually is this coming season.
I also think, though, it's going to be interesting to see how we perceive things, not that he still can't be, but with Anthony Davis next to him. Because that could change, as it had with Steph Curry or Kevin Durant, and what we viewed Golden State to be.
We should mention, it has just been announced that Sarah Kustak will be covering the Junior NBA Global Championship again this year. All right, Sarah, tell us what we should be looking forward to. August 6th, right?
It begins August 6th.
Okay.
Extraordinary. It's on Fox. There's kids from more than 40 countries from around the world. There's 32 teams, so 8 boys from the U.S., 8 boys globally, 8 girls from both the U.S. and globally. And it's extraordinary. I mean, it's fun to see the talent. They're 13 and 14-year-old youths who have just, last year they blew all of our minds. And we just had so much fun, not only getting to watch them, but see them interact with one another, how much they learned, just integrating cultures and getting a chance to really just spend a lot of time together. I'm going to be calling the games with Vince Carter, with Donnie Marshall. Brian Custer is a part of this, Mark Folliwell. However, you know, the really fun part, too, is that there's other NBA players. Dwayne Wade is an ambassador, so he ends up coming to talk. Rick Carlisle will come and talk to the kids. Swin Cash will be there. So it's just a really special time down there in Orlando at the ESPN Wide World of Sports. And it's an excellent experience. I think everyone should make sure to.
Yeah, congratulations. A lot
Thank
of people,
you.
They
Thank
get so consumed with these big houses and everything, but a lot of times, when I was a high school coach, it was far more rewarding when you see the foundation.
Yeah.
Like all these kids are dreaming of one day you covering them and you to be able to see them, and their love for the game is just like our love for the game when it's at a great thing, great event.
And the global part of it, right now you have NBA All-Stars from Greece, Cameroon, Croatia, the Dominican Republic,
this was the
Australia,
year.
Canada. I mean, it is such a global game. It's so cool.
Yeah, and you could, that's the fun part. Who's their favorite player? And many of them have NBA superstars, WNBA superstars to look up to that are from their hometowns or from their home country.
Really good stuff. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
All right, take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Back here, First Things First. Time now for Say What? Kawhi Leonard brought the Raptors their first ever title. So when the Claw wanted to thank the Toronto fans in his Clippers introductory presser, he did it the only way he knows how. Say what?
Before I get started on the Clippers, I want to thank the Toronto Raptor fans. I don't have social media, so I'm not able to put out a paragraph or whatever, but.
He's funny, man. He did a great interview with Chris Haynes on Yahoo Sports that posted overnight. Everyone should read about his process, about not leading the. He said, I wouldn't want you to just lead the Lakers on. He said, man, I wouldn't want that bad karma to come back on me. But it's very retro superstar in that, how am I going to thank the fans? I guess I'm going to have to wait till my press conference because I got no other way to do it. Doesn't have any social media profile. So I liked it. I thought he conducted himself really, really well yesterday.
Well, that's really him. It's not an act. He's not about a whole bunch of fanfare. And he is very excited, not only joining the Clippers, been in Southern California, but the team. He wasn't this excited about joining Toronto. He didn't even necessarily want to go to Toronto, and the first conversations didn't go like the ones yesterday. I can just personally tell you, he's even though he doesn't look like it,
right.
He's excited.
Yeah. All right, time now for stories to start your morning. Ezekiel Elliott is seeking a new deal despite rumors that he's going to hold out. Jason Garrett expects Zeke to be on the team plane to training camp to Oxnard, California today. Nick, you expect Zeke to be at camp?
I do think he'll be there. I hope he takes Chris Carter's advice. I thought it was really smart advice, which is show up, but moderate your workload. Let them know. Don't be expecting to see me in these preseason games. I might back tightened up on me a little bit. I don't know what happened there. But taking it to the point of not showing up, you start getting fined, your teammates start being asked about it, it becomes a bigger issue than it necessarily needs to be. Cowboys have a tendency to pay their players now. Trust that you'll be one of those guys who gets paid.
And don't penalize your teammates. Don't penalize the offensive line because you're holding out. Don't penalize Dak because you're holding out. Amari Cooper, Randall Cobb, the skill guy. Don't penalize them. No, I'm going to be here working with you. But when they play those preseason games, those exhibition games that don't count, I will not be out there risking an injury.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.